Our third session today is Lessons Learned from a Community Academic Initiative, the Development of a Core Competency-Based Training for CAI Community Health Workers. And our presenter is Sergio Matos. Sergio Matos has been a community health worker for over 20 years and has worked to help communities organize around issues of environmental and social justice, worked with families in crisis intervention for suicide, hunger, chronic disease management, and housing issues, and has trained others to help families access health services and navigate complicated healthcare systems to improve their health. For the past 10 years, Sergio has championed the field of health outreach in New York City through education, advocacy, and research. He is a co-founder and executive director of the Community Health Worker Network of New York City, an independent professional association of CHWs that works to organize a CHW voice on issues of policy and practice for the field. Sergio is the immediate past chair of the Community Health Worker section of the American Public Health Association, where he developed a national platform that promotes standards for the practice and integration of CHWs into healthcare and social services delivery systems with recognition, dignity, and respect. Under his leadership, the CHW section led a national campaign that succeeded in getting a unique standard occupational classification for CHWs. Sergio has worked for many years developing CHW models to improve the quality and access to health care for underprivileged individuals and communities throughout New York City and in the Caribbean, including 8 member organizations of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States. Sergio currently works as the Director for Community Health Worker Training and Development at Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, where he is organizing CHWs statewide to establish workforce standards and stable financing for the CHW practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. And thank you all. I applaud your stamina. I don't think I've ever seen this many people at a 4:30 session. And I want to thank CHPPD for accepting this abstract and inviting me to come here. This is a list of our co-authors. We listed them because this piece of work has been accepted by the American Journal of Public Health for publication. That's this association's professional journal, peer review journal. I have nothing. I have stuff to disclose, but it's not financial. And I'm working on it with my therapist. I do want to recognize two of my co-authors who are here, Dr. Mariano Rey and Smiti Kapatia, who are in the front here. Thank you, folks. Yes, please. You might see from that list of authors that it's a very diverse and comprehensive group of people who helped contribute to the development of this work. Okay, again, because this work will be published, and it's published by the NYU New York University Prevention Research Center, those are our funders, our funder. The mission of this project was to build community capacity and leadership. So it wasn't just, we were very focused from the very beginning and aware that it wasn't just an issue of imparting knowledge, because, you know, we do have a fetish for knowledge in this country. But this was more than that. We really wanted to provide knowledge in a way that built community capacity and leadership. And not only leadership for tertiary and secondary care, but for leadership and health promotion. And I know we throw that terminology around a lot in this country, but in practicality, we don't do a whole lot of health promotion. We do a lot of disease management. And so we were very conscious and aware of that in the development of this effort. NYU, the New York University, has a long history of support for community health workers, and I'm going to go into that in a minute. But you might ask, why community health workers? There's a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, and misinterpretation of really what community health workers are and what it is that they do. And so there were a couple of issues that were very, very critical in NYU's decision to really support community health workers. One was this idea of shared lifestyle, right? That community health workers have a shared life experience with the people that they're serving. And that's really very profound and different sometimes from many other health professions in that shared life experience really leads to a peer relationship. it leads more to a descriptive and supportive relationship with the people they serve, rather than a prescriptive one, which is the relationship people are accustomed to when they confront the healthcare system, right? I mean, you go to your doctor, he tells you what to do, and if you obey, you're good. If you don't, you're bad. And when you come back, we'll tell you about how bad you are, because we've prescribed something to you, and what's wrong with you that you don't obey us. CHWs have a different relationship, and it's not that authoritarian, and that was important to NYU's selection of this particular workforce as the driving engine for their efforts. The other big thing is that because of that shared life experience with the people that they serve, CHWs really have a unique understanding of the norms, attitudes, and values of the people that they're serving. In many settings, particularly in immigrant communities, and these projects will run in New York City, which is a microcosm of the world. But in particularly in communities, in peoples that come from other parts of the world, our healthcare system is really very alien. And people come here to New York City where we are with very different norms and beliefs and behaviors around what health is, what health care is, what disease is, and how to manage that. And so CHWs are particularly adept because of their shared life experiences at negotiating those tensions with people and helping them really not only understand our system, but also helping our system understand how to be more appropriate in class issues, certainly, but in many other venues. I just want to tell you very briefly I want to go back for a second to this second bullet there, because it's not just language. It's really so much more than language. I think our health department tried to translate some fact sheets on diseases, and I think they translated it into 63 languages. I think we have 218 languages in New York City, and that's probably an old number. So it's really not just about language, but it's more about behavior and how people view health and what people feel entitled to. Many of the communities that we work with, people don't feel entitled to seeking health care. And if they do, they, if you can get over the entitlement issue, then there's a whole, you know, this immigration hysteria and police and hatred that's been fermented in our society for the last couple of 10 years. And so people know this, and if that's the way that you're living in as cosmopolitan area as New York is, if that's the way that you're living, and if you have to be afraid of police and authority, then emergency rooms seem pretty attractive. Because you can be anonymous, you're not going to get bills because you can tell them whatever address you want, and they'll never find you again. And so there are very real concrete social and psychosocial issues that are contributing to the inappropriate use of our healthcare system that are beyond the control of our healthcare system. So the projects, just so that you understand the diversity, RICE is a Korean South Asian community intervention program that's focused around diabetes. Aspire is a Filipino-focused community run out of a Filipino community that is focused on cardiovascular disease and hypertension. Dream is a Bangladeshi community intervention, which is focused around diabetes management and access. This is a particularly interesting project because in New York City, a large sector of the Bangladeshi immigrant community works as cab drivers. And cab drivers have a unique set of issues associated with accessing to them. For number one, they work enormously long hours. So usually clinic schedules are not accessible to them. Secondly, there are a myriad of cultural, psychosocial, and status issues that get in the way of seeking access and even admitting that you might not be feeling so well. Lastly, there are some unique health issues associated with sitting in a car in the streets of New York for many hours. A lot of them are mental issues, but mental health issues. But just for you to see the diversity, there's two more. The Mr. B project is a project that targets older black men, and it's run out of where older black men in New York City hang out, which is barbershops. And that's focused around high blood pressure and colorectal screening. Again, there's a huge number of issues that are preventing men, older black men, from seeking colorectal screening. You know what those are. They are prevalent, they are strong, they are hard to negotiate. But these young folks that are working with these guys in the barbershops are really very good at this. They have a promise that you're not going to feel a thing. And it's okay, nobody will ever know.
And actually, the anesthesia makes you feel pretty good.
And lastly, there's a Faith CRC intervention, which targets mosques and churches and the communities of faith, which are very diverse in the city of New York. But it is where people often go for health advice and health-seeking behaviors. And in that project, CHWs, they preach from the pulpit. They hold groups. They do all kinds of really innovative interactions. So you might ask, why a community academic partnership? Well, let me explain a little bit what that was about. Our purpose was to develop a training program. We at the Community Health Worker Network of New York City have years of experience in developing training programs for CHWs, both here and abroad, as Molly was so generous to mention in my introduction. Our culture delegates authority for creating training programs to academic institutions. We've surrendered that power to academic institutions. And academic institutions really are a culture, as Guadalupe mentioned before. They're a culture. I'm a member of that culture. Academia has its own values, its own norms, its own beliefs, its own behaviors. They value things which are really very different from community. Community has different values than because community is a different culture. Does that make sense? Okay, so NYU realized very early on that you really needed a combination, not just to surrender that authority to academia, but you really needed to develop a partnership between community and academia that would produce appropriate results. Yumari, she's one of our co-authors on this work also. And Yumari comes from a rich background of developing training programs in a social justice and equality context. And so with that NYU team, this was really an important driving force, and we were always very aware. So our goal was to provide standardized training, but this is a big but, we never really wanted to create one standard curriculum. We wanted to create curriculum standards. We realized that if we tried to create a standard curriculum, a single holy curriculum, that would set off a whole turf war amongst and between institutions. And it would limit the available resources if only one holy person could run it, right? And so what we wanted to do was really create, establish, and document standards that would then be used by any organization that wanted to meet those standards. And we thought that was a more appropriate and deliberate way of leveraging existing resources. And lastly, because this was a research project, we wanted to be able to compare the CHW effect across all these five projects. And so we needed to establish a base of training to be confident that all the CHWs in the different programs and communities were operating from a similar skill base. This is a huge workforce, and I just want to say that there's been a lot of work done, and a lot of organizations have recognized the value of this work, including this organization, the American Public Health Organization. We also did a lot of literary review. we searched the existing evidence base, and I will say that evidence base has its merits clearly, but there is a fascination with the evidence base that we need to get beyond. The evidence base is generally a couple of years old. This work was done last year, and it's going to be published next year, and so it will enter the evidence base. But by the time it does, it's already 2 years old. And so although evidence-based is a valuable thing, we really need to develop other paradigms that allow us to be innovative and creative. If we rely solely on the evidence-based, you'll only be doing things that have already been done, and will really get in the way of your innovation and creativity. So we did examine that, but we also did our own original research that was done out of the Community Health Worker Network of New York City, which really was a lot of CBPR, to really document what are the roles, what are the tasks, and what are the skills that community health workers need. I think it is unethical to develop training standards if you don't understand what it is you're training for. And although this is a norm in the academic community, there is an ethical question about that, right? If you don't know what it is CHWs do, who are you to train them? That didn't make any sense to us. And so we did a lot of work to really articulate what is the scope of work, what are the roles, the big ticket items that people do this work for. And what are the tasks, the set of activities that people engage in to accomplish those roles, those big ticket items? And then lastly, what is the skill set that you need to be engaged in those activities? It was a very thorough and deliberate piece of research, which yielded enormous results. Our findings were that there were two major buckets in which CHW training needed to consider. One was content, and one was methodology. We pay short shrift to pedagogy and training methodologies in this country. But we were aware of that, and we were very, very cognizant that these were non-traditional adult learners and that they don't necessarily learn best from lecture. Lecture is convenient for the teacher, right? It's easy to control an agenda if you're in power of the training. And it's easy to control the agenda if you're talking all the time. But adults generally don't learn very well that way. Most of you are, if you've been educated, you've been in school for 20 years. And most of those 20 years were to learn how to learn from lecture. So if you haven't had those 20 years, you probably don't learn very well. And then, of course, again, because this was a research project, we had a strong evaluation component. The core competency framework that we developed, I've been ad-libbing, so let me get back on here. This is the framework for the core competencies. We divided our training into core competencies and specialty topics. We realized that the core competencies were the set of skills that CHWs would need to develop and that those would be applied in specialty areas. The core competencies are these. I will mention that the CHW, there was a component of this framework that we called the CHW approach. And we really paid a lot of attention to helping CHWs identify that approach because it is a very different approach from traditional training experiences. And we wanted CHWs to understand that their role was their role and that it was a valuable and dignified and important role. And that although they might be living in a medical environment, thank you, Molly, that they might be living in a medical environment, that it is important to retain and maintain the integrity of your own practice and not sell out to the values of the medical system because you were sought out because of that uniqueness. These are the specialization skills, and you will notice on the right that I didn't mention asthma or mental health or nutrition when I was talking about the projects, but this training program sort of realized that when you enter a person's life, it's not just about diabetes. It might be a myriad of things, and so we really tried to diversify the specialty training. You will see here that the training was all very active and interactive, participatory. I want to say as an aside, for those of you who might not be aware, adult learning is a discipline. You can go and get a master's and a PhD in adult learning. And there are principles to adult learning, which we largely ignore in this culture, but there are principles to how to help adults learn, and we did use those. The location was local. It was that little storefront there in that big building that you see with the orange curtains. We did some of our trainings in the park, in the community park there. And this it was located in our local Chinatown. There is a body of evidence that suggests that if you take CHWs out of their environment and to a medical setting for training, that when they come back, the community no longer recognizes them or accepts them. And so we, again, recognize that and respected and honored that principle. It was offered in two sections. It was 105 hours of core competencies and then 35 hours of specialty training. Our evaluation tools were three. We did try to use quantitative and qualitative evaluation instruments. I will say that the quantitative data was used using SPSS, which is what people do. The qualitative data was used by using this Auerbach and Silverstein coding and analyzing methodology, which is... it's still counting. You're just counting words and concepts instead of numbers. But this is an indictment to the research community and the academic community that we are really very much in need of alternative research paradigms that we can measure qualitative information with. All we have right now is telling your stories. That's really the only research tool we have for qualitative data. And we really need to, the scientific community really needs to do a little better with that. This describes who the folks were. I won't pain you with that. What we found was that people really, really appreciated this training and that it increased their confidence when we used pre- and post-training, their confidence in the content material and in the skill set that they were learning. In particular, they were very grateful for understanding how people change and how to understand their own roles and their own responsibilities to their communities and to their employers. It was also, they were very grateful, and actually did not know this, but they were grateful to learn how important it was to celebrate and recognize client successes. We often criticize people for not following our prescriptions, but we don't often congratulate them and celebrate them when they are successful. They found that the most useful topic was communication. We have a communication module which is called Compassionate Nonviolent Communication, which they really appreciated. So they showed a confidence in their ability to utilize the skills that they were helped to learn. They expressed intention to relate this application to their work and to really carry it on. They appreciated the awareness of placing their work in a context of social justice and not just medicine. And overall, they expressed a lot of satisfaction with the training. These are some of the comments. It's a lot, and you will have the opportunity to view them. But let me tell you that people told us, like, this has changed my life. I will never be the same. This has really given me an appreciation for the work that I do. This is the first time that I've been treated with respect and dignity in a training environment. And this was really important to us because there was a great diversity of educational background in the training group. There were people with PhDs there. And there was a lot of tension at the beginning because some people thought they didn't need the training. But because of our training methodology and our adult learning principles, everybody in the room was really valued, not only as a learner, but as a teacher. And so it was all very, they taught each other, each one teach one, and they were all very satisfied with it. On a scale of 1 to 5, 4.45 and 4.55 thought it was appropriate. And I got to go. So there's our contact information. Thank you.